Hey everybody, it's JT. What is on your holiday meal shopping list? Well, I would suggest Painted Hills Natural Beef. It is some of the best beef in the world. And your friends and family will be thanking you for a long time if you serve Painted Hills Natural Beef for your holiday meals. And now you can buy it online just by going to PaintedHillsBeef.com. Use the code BBQNATION at checkout and save yourself 15% on your order. Give Painted Hills Natural Beef a place on your table this holiday season.
It's Barbecue Nation with JT on a Northwest Lifestyle Weekend. Now here's JT.
Hey everybody, welcome to Barbecue Nation. I'm JT along with my second in command, Dr. Dave, high atop the radio world in downtown Portland in the Turn It, Don't Burn It studios, and all of our affiliates out there on the Radio Northwest Network. Thank you very much. We're about 3 weeks away from Christmas, and Santa, the elves, Aunt Mildred, Christmas trees, and all the undeniable urges to eat everything in front of you. So have you ever thought about changing things up a bit for ye old Christmas feast? This week on The Nation, I'm joined by my dear friend, mentor, TV icon, Graham Kerr, the Galloping Gourmet. And we're going to be talking about some time-honored Christmas traditions around the table and a few things that we might consider to change it up a bit. And we've also got a music being's Graham, you know, English fellow, so to speak. We've got Cream with Eric Clapton, Ginger Baker, and Jack Bruce on for our music today. So there you go. I did that especially for you, Graham.
Thank you. That's an early Christmas gift. Thank
there you go. There you go. First of all, I wanted to talk about some traditional Christmas dishes. We'll stick to the ones here in the States to start with. But you've got turkey, you've got some hams. A lot of people are doing prime ribs or rib roasts these days. And which is all well and good. It seems to me, though, that some of the side dishes that can be easily changed up. My house, we're a fan of twice-baked potatoes. Some people are Yorkshire pudding, what have you. What are your thoughts on some of those dishes?
Well, if you take, let's take the Yorkshire pudding for a moment. Sure. I think that's something that most people usually team up with beef. If you take the batter, the exact batter that you have for the recipe for that, and you make a pancake with that instead of making a popover or the Yorkshire pudding. What you do is you make it like you would make a crepe, the sort of French style, not the thicker pancake, but a very thin one. Mm-hmm. And you pour it into the pan and you get some fresh sage leaves. And you sprinkle those sage leaves on the undercooked side of the pancake. When you flip the pancake, then the sage begins to cook into the batter on the other side, the cooking side now. Mm-hmm. And what you do is you fold it one edge to the other. And now you've got a half a pancake and fold it again. And it's now in as a quarter. And what you've got as you fold it in, you've got these sage leaves showing on the outside. And it has a wonderful perfume to it. Now, what you can do before you fold it is take a spoonful of creamed horseradish sauce and sprinkle that all over the top of the pancake and then fold it in. And you've now got a little sandwich of sage and horseradish and this wonderful same taste that you get out of the popover. Mm-hmm. Forgive me, sorry for coughing.
Yeah. It's all right.
So now that I put that with roast beef, and every time I have served that, and that's my own invention, everybody just raves about it. And it's so much easier to do, actually, because you can fold them up ahead of time and just reheat them. They reheat beautifully, it really dresses up the beef, if you like. Now, I love to do a roast pork, instead of it going to the ham, I want to get to it first as just that leg end of pork. And to then cut through the rind of the pork, the outside skin, in very with a very sharp knife so that it's about a quarter inch, at the most a quarter of an inch, slices, very, very finely cut. And then if you rub salt into that and then brush olive oil in and then roast it at about 385 for about 30 minutes per pound, you need to get it to about 185 degrees Fahrenheit internal temperature. What you will then have is that skin crisps all over the top, and you can break that up as that very crisp chitlings, if you like. Mm-hmm. It's not really chitlings, but it's a crisp skin. And it's just nicely fatty on the inside and beautiful on the outside. You can rub a little caraway seed into those slots, those little gashes that you've made in the outside skin. That is even better. How's that for a couple of ideas?
I think that's wonderful. I think that's absolutely wonderful. I mean, truthfully.
You're too easy to please, Jeff.
Yeah, well, we know about that because of, the push-away plan, which doesn't always work for me. But it's just delightful. Now, in England, in the UK, in Europe, what have you, there's, they have some different dishes. I mean, yes, they have Yorkshire pudding and all that. But some of their, their traditional dishes, well, even like their Christmas puddings. We don't do a lot of Christmas puddings over here in the sense of, as you would say, the way you might find in England. So, first, here's a little historical question. Are a lot of those dishes that are now kind of time well served in the UK and in with the British populations, whatever, did a lot of those come out of the Victorian era? Were they created then, or have they just been around for hundreds and hundreds of years?
Well, there's one which you mentioned, which is the Christmas pudding. That's probably been around since the Vikings began to attack the east coast of the British Isles. So that would be in the, fourth or fifth century.
Mm-hmm.
You just think of a Viking and you will see immediately that they have these conical shaped helmets. What they used to do, they used to pack a lot of dried fruit onto their fighting ships as they would come across. And then they would boil up the dried fruit. It's something called a bloop soup. And it was just hot dried fruits in water. And they would eat that to sustain them and give them energy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what happened was that they would put those in their helmet. And they put the helmet into the fire. And then the fire, this is really early barbecue stuff. That would bloop, and if they didn't eat it all, they would let it go cold in the helmet. Then if you tap it out of the helmet, it's in the shape of a Christmas pudding.
Oh, okay.
So really the Christmas pudding started as just fruit. And then it got flour mixed into it as they began to start to bake them. And then they would put brandy into it or rum and nuts. And eventually it's become quite a thing. There's a coin in the British realm called a sixpence, six pennies. It's
right.
A tiny little thing, looks like a dime. And that traditionally is plunged into the Christmas pudding as you're stirring it up. And then the lucky person who gets that slice with the sixpence in it is supposed to be very blessed.
Oh, I didn't know that. Ah.
There is a company who sell Christmas puddings. I don't have their address, I'm afraid. I should have got that.
No, that's fine.
And they actually sell it complete with a sixpence.
Oh, fascinating. Well, we'll have to look that up and share that with people. We are going to take a break, and we're going to be back with my dear friend Graham Kerr from The Galloping Gourmet and Jumping Over Tables and all that. But we're talking about Christmas dishes, and we will be back right after this. Hey, welcome back to Green. This is Barbecue Nation. I've been doing too many shows this morning. We've got my dear friend Graham Kerr with us. If you'd like to email us, it's BBQNation@KXL.com. You can also check us out on SoundCloud. Just type in Barbecue Nation. I'd like to thank a couple of our affiliates, KPNW in Eugene and 570 KVI in Seattle. And one other thing really quickly, if you still have some images, pictures of your Thanksgiving dinner, if you send them to us at KXL, BBQNation@KXL.com, you will be eligible to win a copy of Meathead's book, The Science of Great Barbecuing and Grilling, or Barbecue and Grilling. He's won a ton of awards for that. New York Times bestseller list, top 22 essential cookbooks, et cetera, et cetera. All you got to do is send us a picture of your Thanksgiving spread, and Dr. Dave and I will pick out the best one, okay? And you will then win a copy of Meathead's book, autographed, by the way. We're talking with my buddy Graham Kerr, Barbecue Nation, and I was going to tell you, my mother, I couldn't figure this out for years. My mother's fruitcakes at Christmas, everybody wanted one. But you grew up believing that nobody liked fruitcake. Because sometimes they were dry or whatever, you know. But everybody loves my mom's fruitcakes, or they did. Come to find out, she made her fruitcakes, put the dried fruits in it and all that. She would wrap it in cheesecloth, and then she would put it in these 5-gallon tins and pour brandy on it. And she would do that. She would start that like the middle of October. And so by Christmas, they were quite good. They were quite moist. And we never had any complaints, evidently, about people eating mom's fruitcake.
I have heard it say that every Christmas you should make the Christmas cake for the next Christmas.
Yes. Well,
and mature it in brandy and let it soak in brandy for the whole year. And you can understand why people would enjoy that.
Oh, absolutely. And they were good. I mean, I ate them when I was a kid, and they were good. And if you put a little, homemade whipped cream, not Cool Whip or anything, but really homemade, really stiff whipped cream on it, a dollop of that, man, you were in heaven with those things.
Yes.
That was good.
Almost in heaven, yes.
Almost
in heaven. You would be on your way.
Yes, yes. Well, we were talking off the air a little bit about, you were talking about using some strawberries and some black pepper as on a bit of a tart. Tell the listeners about that.
Well, you know, it is the brand to look for is Cross and Blackwell, and I'm not paid to say it, but they're in pretty well all the stores at the present moment. My Lakewood Safeway has got stacks of it, and it's just a spoonful of that in a tart shell. You can make a larger pie out of it as a mincemeat pie as well.
Sure.
And it's really basically just all dried fruit. It used to be chopped suet, used to be mm-hmm. in there, the kidney fat, but that's not now the case. So it's just fine. And when it's completely baked and ready, then the strawberries go on the top and some whipped cream on first and then the strawberries. and then the black pepper on the top of that, and you slice that up as pie. And it looks so like Christmas, and it tastes so like Christmas. It's really, really a good thing to do.
So are in the Galloping Gourmet household, do your children and grandkids and stuff now, because I know you have them, do they expect certain things from you as far as a Christmas traditional dish?
Yes.
Okay.
They really do expect lamb.
Oh yes. And is that just a shank or chops, or how are you
it's
preparing
it? It's a leg of lamb. It's a leg of lamb, or a couple of legs of lamb, depending on how many we've got.
Sure.
And it's roasted in apple and orange juice. So that's a 50-50 unsweetened orange juice, unsweetened apple juice, same quantity, baste it as it's roasting, and then deglaze the pan afterwards, put it through a fat strainer, get some of the fat off it, and then thicken that with a little arrowroot. With Bob's Mills has arrowroot at a much less cost than the one in the silly little jar.
Right.
But arrowroot is terrific because it clears out completely. It doesn't look like cornstarch. Cornstarch has a way of making things look cloudy. But arrowroot clears completely. So you've got this beautiful crystal clear apple and orange gravy that is poured over the lamb. And it's very hard to beat that. That's about as good as lamb can be.
Did I ever tell you, and I'm not sure I did, but I'll make this quick because we've only got a couple minutes left in this segment. You were the person long before I met you that turned me on to arrowroot. And I decided that I was going to make cream peas and potatoes with arrowroot one night with my aunt, who couldn't cook at all. I used a half a jar, one of those silly little jars you were just talking about, but I used a half a jar in the pot of... and the cream peas and potatoes. And my father came by and stuck a stainless steel serving spoon in it, and it almost wouldn't come out because it was so thick. And he kind of, my dad was a great guy, but he said, yeah, I think you need to practice a little more on this stuff. But I just remember that big pot, and it looked really pretty, but you couldn't get it out of the pot. So there you go.
Yeah, you have to be very, very light-handed with arrowroot.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's goopy and stiff and nasty if you do too much. Very small amount. Really, one tablespoonful to a full cup of liquid will do a reasonable job of thickening.
Right. Well, I probably use 3 ounces in... And that was a bit much. So listen, we're going to take another break. Yes. Oh, God, it was horrible. We're going to take another break here on Barbecue Nation. We're going to come back and talk with Graham some more. And what we're going to talk about is feasting, nourishment, and some subjects that are near and dear to Graham's heart. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
Thinking about the times you drove.
It's full-flavored radio, Barbecue Nation with JT.
Hey, welcome back to Barbecue Nation. I'm JT along with Dr. Day. We've got Graham Kerr with us today, the Galloping Gourmet. As you've heard me say many times, what an influence this man has had on my life and my cooking. But we were talking the other day on the phone, and we were talking about traditions and feasting, and Graham brought up a really interesting point. Because he likes the word nourish and nourishment, but I think in the nourish singular form there. And we tend to gorge a bit over the holidays. Granted, that's kind of acceptable behavior, at least in my house it is. But I think you made some valid points about how can we do some of these traditional dishes and then put a little more nourishment into it. So... share that with us.
I'd like to do that. I don't want anybody to think that the table at Christmas or Thanksgiving or New Year's, whatever it is, should look down and dowdy and, oh, really? Is that all we have to eat?
Yes.
It isn't a diet. I don't want to suggest a diet. I do want it to look wonderful. I want it to be full of tastes and aromas and colors and textures. And I think when you really look at food and cook it properly, it is abundantly nourishing. It is every cell of one's body just begs for that kind of, oh, my Lord, look at this. Now, unfortunately, by habit and tradition, we tend to go for what is fatty and what is sweet and salty. And we tend to pile that on because it meets those senses in the front of our mouth and our nose, you know, and we just breathe it in and say, oh, this is fantastic. But at the same time, there are plant foods which are just as desirable and look wonderful and have amazing tastes as well. And I cannot understand why it is that we must always focus on the thing that actually has a risk factor to it.
Yeah.
It's true, you know, we put on about 5 pounds over the holiday period, and we don't really need to do that. Last year, I went in at my weight, and I came out at the same weight after the entire Thanksgiving period. And I ate wonderfully well during that time. I was thoroughly nourished. So all I am trying to say to people is if you have a portion size in your mind that you're looking forward to as a feast, of something which is fatty, salty, and sweet, may I suggest that you simply cut that portion size in half and then fill the plate up with plant foods that you really love. And I want to put that in biggest capitals. If you love pineapple, then do a sauté of pineapple and put it on the plate and fill part of the plate. Take some of the meat and take some of the refined carbohydrates. Those are manufactured carbohydrates, mm-hmm. pies and cakes and that sort of thing. Halve those quantities and put fresh fruit and fresh vegetables in its place. And I'll tell you, the food looks terrific. You have an abundant amount to eat, but the risk factor goes down hugely.
Well, I would, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, my wife Trina died 2 years ago. She had had a stroke and a heart attack at the age of 53. And we had 28 wonderful years together by simply doing what I just said. And I valued every one of those years. We had a wonderful time. And we celebrated food together. There was no downside to it whatsoever. And now that she's passed, I would love that for other people. I've just simply lifted my sights from just her. I always have included other people, but I'm really passionate about it now. I don't see the point of getting stuck into food that doesn't have taste, aroma, color, and texture built into it.
Now that's,
and, you know, a good piece of beef has good taste, and it has an aroma which comes off it when it's beautifully roasted as well and barbecued. It's a wonderful thing, but once you've eaten a piece of that meat, it continues to be exactly the same all the way through until you finished it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see why I shouldn't really celebrate half a portion of that and then have some great potatoes cooked really brilliantly, a nice beefsteak tomato, you know, with a fresh basil on the top of it, some roasted parsnips. Oh, come on. You know, it's an amazing thing to see an abundance of color on a feasting table.
Well, there's so much that we have available to us to make it colorful. You were talking about the green beans. You can, you know, you can do the green beans and you can julienne or dice or whatever your heart desires, some red and yellow bell peppers in with those. And
oh, yes.
You know,
yes.
Just
wonderful.
Very basic things like that. They do add a lot of color, very festive. If you want to put a sauce on it, put a bit of a sriracha sauce on it or something. You can create that, and it's very good. I mean, one of the things that we did at my family a number of years ago, and we don't do it now simply for the fact that there's not that many around, but we went from a very traditional, heavy kind of Christmas Eve dinner to, I switched it to a seafood chowder with a Caesar salad and some good bread. And then there was, the olives and sliced veggies and different things like that. But that's what we went to, and I really enjoyed actually making that seafood chowder because we put all the different things in it. We put shrimp and crab and scallops and capers and mushrooms and all kinds of things in it. But that was a big change for people when I did that. They were used to having either a turkey or a ham on Christmas Eve.
Yes.
And then the next day they would actually have kind of a big breakfast, and then they would have a traditional Christmas Day dinner later, prime rib or what have you. And it took them a little while to get used to it. Now they expect it. Those who still come are like, are we having the chowder?
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Can I suggest something to you?
Sure.
It's only come out this year and on the West Coast. Knutzen's, Knutzens, is a large orchard up our part of the world in the upper Pacific Northwest. And they are doing an organic pear juice, rather like Martinelli's sparkling apple juice.
Yes.
They do a pear juice, and it's really, really good. I've been serving it at my table I have lunches nowadays here, and at my lunches I always serve this organic pear juice and a wine, depending upon the people who are coming.
Sure.
And everybody loves it. It's a real celebration. It's reasonably priced, so it's like a cider. Yeah.
Can you use that
with pears?
Can you use that with for a baste or something? If you were roasting?
No, I'm using that as a drink with the food. I think it goes brilliantly with the food. Mm. I do have one other drink which I'd like to suggest to people, which is tonic water. Angostura bitters, Angostura bitters. You always find it in the setup area where you get lime and lemon juice and those sort of things in supermarkets. Just a few drops of that, it's blood red, and it turns the tonic water pink. So if you put a piece of lime in that and a piece of mint, that is one of the most refreshing drinks that you can ever have. The Angostura bitters is alcoholic, but it's only two or three drops. It just dissipates into nothing. So it can be served to people who want to have alcohol or not. It won't affect anybody. And that is a beautiful drink. And I serve it often. People say, "What on earth is this? This is fantastic."
I'm not sure people at my house would, not that they wouldn't try it, but they probably wouldn't expect something like that from me. So I will give it a shot. How's that? I will do that.
Well, please, I think you would be amazed how it's very drinkable. It's the most drinkable, bubbly kind of alternative to Coke and Pepsi and the rest of it.
Yes.
Really different.
Yep. We're going to take another break, and we're going to be back with Graham after these messages. And we'd also really quickly want to thank all of our affiliates again down on the Radio Northwest Network. And you're listening to Barbecue Nation. Welcome back to Barbecue Nation. I'm JT. Dr. Dave is, I don't know what he's doing right now, but we've got Graham Kerr with us, my friend, the Galloping Gourmet, been talking about some Christmas ideas. Many of you may not know this, but Graham wrote a lot of different books, not just cookbooks. And Amazon's helping him out right now and bringing those books back. Tell us what's going on with that.
I am absolutely out of my little socks about this one. It's not so much a book as a program. I did a series of programs with PBS in which I looked at 52 methods of cooking that nourished and did not introduce the same level of risk that would be normal. So I was reducing risk and increasing nourishment and enjoying the process very much. And I did 52 episodes of that. It's called Graham Kerr's Kitchen. And what they've done, they found those tapes. Where they found them, I don't know. But they put them on Amazon Prime. If you're an Amazon Prime person, which I am because I buy quite a bit of stuff from them and I get free shipping and special deals, which more than covers the membership that I get from them. Anyway, so they put these 52 episodes up. I think they cost 99 cents each. I know I get 3 cents per play. So this is not what you might call, you know, asking for help in my finances. I can tell you, those programs are so close to my heart, and they would be so useful for people. And you can get, if you go on Amazon Prime, you can get a free play of a half-hour episode, and that gives you an idea about what you might get from this. So it's useful.
So it's Graham Kerr's Kitchen. Check it out on Amazon Prime, and you can buy them there. And how many did you say there's 52 episodes?
There's 52 episodes. They have, as always, if you get all 52, they knock the price down considerably. I think it winds up at about 45 cents a show or something.
Wow. If they sell all 52 of them, you'll get $1.37. So, in royalties. You will.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. No, it's all good. One last thing. We've got a couple minutes here, Graham, and I always thank you so much for taking the time to be with us. What would you like to see happen at Christmas this year?
Oh, how nice of you to ask that. I am getting some simple thank you cards, and I'm writing on those, "You really have been graceful for me, and I'm so very grateful that you have the patience to do a hard job." I want to, when I go around at the stores buying locally, which I want to try and do this year, I want to be able to, after somebody's looked after me and sold me something, I want to give them this little card to say thank you.
That's a very good idea.
You know, these people stand on their feet for hours, and they get really strange people who are trying to get there, and it's a tough job. I just wanted to be able to say thank you.
I can verify that because I worked in retail for a number of years, a long time ago. And, man, some people were really tough around Christmas to help.
Yes.
Really tough. And when people...
I think, you know, they do say that it's a very tough time for some people.
Mm-hmm.
There's all this statement about joy, and they don't feel the joy, and therefore they feel really upset by the fact that people seem to be enjoying themselves, and they're not. And, you know, that happened to me for years and years. Last year I got so fed up with the word joy and not understanding it that I just simply said, "I need to know what joy is about." And I found myself in a stable, rather like, you know, the traditional scene of the birth of Christ. And I was just standing there in my ordinary gear, and there's Mary with Jesus. And she looks up at me, doesn't say, "Why are you dressed like that?" She looks up at me and says, "Would you like to hold him?" And I thought, I remember what it was like holding my own kids and how I thought I might drop them, and to drop this would be ridiculous. But I said, yes, and I held this little bundle in my hand, in my arms, and I looked down at this little face, and I know this sounds a bit soppy, my friend, but I started to cry out of pure joy.
Mm-hmm.
And as the tears fell on this little bundle, I just said, "You came because you love me."
Yep.
And that completely revolutionized my entire view of Christmas. And I can't wait for it to come this year.
It'll be here shortly. Graham Kerr, my friend, the Galloping Gourmet, thank you for sharing your thoughts on not just the cooking, but some other great thoughts about Christmas itself. It's always a pleasure.
Jeff, I always admire your tenacity and all the years you've done this for so many wonderful people. Well done.
Thank you. That's it this week for us on Barbecue Nation. We're going to be talking some specialty Christmas gifts for people next week. Until then, you can check out my website at thecowboycook.com. Take care, everybody.